Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another amazing episode of The Media Matters. I'm your host, Chantel, and I have my amazing bestie with me.
Hello, everybody. Marie Rose here.
Mm-hmm. I was going to introduce you, but I thought...
Yeah, well, I beat you to it.
I was like, I'm going to let her do it. So I'm from the jump, you guys, I'm just going to tell you right now, there's a little more echo than usual, and I am going to try my very hardest to edit that stuff out as much as I can, but I am in the process of moving. We're not recording in the usual recording room because that room is a little upside down with just life
stuff.
So we're in another room that has some boxes and broken down boxes, and it is pretty empty in here, but it's the only space where we could really do this. Any other space was way too big and there would be a lot of echo. So I'm sorry in advance. Yes, in the process of moving, which who doesn't love to move?
Oh, God. I'm moving offices and that's just a pain in the butt on its own.
So I am also moving offices. So what Marie is referring to is our office is moving from one city to another. And it's like a 20-minute drive-ish?
Yeah,
20-30?
Yeah.
And so we have been in our current facility for 20-plus years.
Yeah, and we've accumulated a lot.
Yes, a lot of stuff.
Stuff.
Yes, like we're going to get a dumpster.
Right.
Yeah.
And not only do we have to clear out our own offices, we had one coworker pass away, mm-hmm. and we've had a few coworkers get laid off.
Mm-hmm.
So we have all those empty offices to clear out as well, which is not fun.
And then there's common areas like the copy room with all the mail stuff and the kitchen and the lobby and the, like, it just goes on and on. And you realize how much crap you have.
Oh yeah, you never know how much crap you have until it's time to move.
So today I put two trash bags together just in my office. Now they're not full because to fill them would be retarded, because then, you know, you can't lift them and they rip and all that. So it's like a third full. But that's more than enough. So it was just like crap in my desk, old files that I haven't touched in forever that have no relevance today. It's like an 8-track, like it means nothing.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty good at keeping my files cleared out. You know, I keep, you know, I do the whole 7-year requirement, and around the holidays, around Christmas and whatnot, is when, you know, the customer isn't there, and I go ahead and take that time and clear out everything that's older than 7 years.
That's a good practice.
So file wise, I'm okay,
mm-hmm.
but I've just got so much other stuff.
Yeah. So I right now have, I think, 9 boxes.
Wow.
In my office. So these boxes are 12 by 12 by 16, I think they are.
Yeah, they're not very big.
So they're small, which makes them easier to carry, for sure. Now, the problem is that because they're small, you need more of them.
Right.
But I've also, you know, like I said, I've thrown stuff away, so I feel good about that. In my house, I've done the same thing. I've gotten rid of a lot of stuff, which makes me feel good. I've been on this purge thing since, like, May when I got back from Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels good. It really does feel good to get stuff out. And there's a lot more stuff that I have to get out. To my right, there are 2 big plastic bins of things that are going to be donated because, oh, good Lord. Anyway, so that is the life catch up. And we have another special guest with us today. It is a 4-legger by the name of Huey.
Adorable.
I know, he's delicious. He's right by my feet chewing on his ball. So if you guys hear some weird sounds, that's what it is. And I've just been gone a lot, so I was like, Marie, let's test it and see how he'll do in the room. Hennessy doesn't give 2 craps. She's in her room in the living room. Like, I'm in her room. She's in her bed in the living room. But Huey is a total mama's boy.
It's either here around your feet or at the door barking, going, mama.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to try this out and see how it works.
He's a good boy.
He's a good boy. Except, like, he's very good. Like, he'll just lay in here, but he wants a toy or 5. So right now he's walking under the table. So let's see how this is going to go.
I'm sitting across from Chantel and all I see is a black tail wagging.
Right. He looks like a shark. That's how I can see. Like if I'm laying in the bed or wherever I am, like if I just look for his tail and it's like up in the air and he's walking around. I know.
Dun, dun.
Yeah.
Dun,
dun. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, I know exactly where he is. So in any event... So we are hearing a lot from you guys and you guys are reaching out via social media and email and all that stuff. And thank you so much for doing that. We love to hear from you guys. We really do. The amount of friends that the show is making on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat, like it's just super exciting. So thank you guys for following us and for showing interest. Like I can't even believe that people listen to the show. I'm so excited. I just love it. I'm like, did someone dare you? Stop it. Who put you up to this?
It's like, oh my God, somebody listened.
I know. So the show, like, it's the craziest thing since we've been back with season two. The amount of downloads the show is getting is through the freaking roof. And I'm so excited. I don't know if the stars realigned. I don't know what happened, but... I guess everyone missed us or the people that had a gun to their head. I don't really know.
Who knows?
I don't know.
Just
but
enjoy it. Enjoy
yeah,
it.
It's super exciting. Thank you guys so, 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 so much for tuning in on Tuesday night or whenever you tune in and catch up with the show and listen to us talk about ridiculous stuff. I mean, it's a lot of hard work and it means so much that you guys love it and keep coming back for more and reach out to us all the time. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And because I say it all the time, I'm going to say it again. Make sure if you guys don't know how to get to us, we are on Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram and Twitter and whatever. Like we're damn near everywhere. The next goal is like iHeartRadio.
Cool.
That's what I'm working toward is iHeartRadio in addition to other stuff. Like our damn Patreon page. Like I still.
You have not fixed that yet.
There's like so much on my list. And right now things are so
and
crazy.
You're moving.
With the move of the office and the move of my home. And so much stuff going on. So I promise you guys the webpage will be back up and running soon. The Patreon page will finally have stuff on it. Like there's so much stuff on the list. And I am dying to get to all of it. But it's like there are not enough hours in the day.
No, we just have to clone ourselves.
I know.
Wouldn't that be great if we could clone ourselves?
I mean, yeah.
I would like have a clone for work, a clone for housework. For dishes.
Yeah.
A clone for the yard.
And me, I would just lay in the sun.
Oh, yeah. I'd just be at the beach.
Right. I'd be like, helicopter pilot. Come and get me. I didn't feel like driving today. Yeah, so... Oh, yes, life. But I promise you guys, I promise. I'm working on all of those things. I will get everything up and running. And if you guys have anything you want to see on Patreon, any special, anythings, make sure you let us know. Send me an email, themediamatters@gmail.com, or find the show on Twitter and Snapchat at Media Matters and on Facebook and Instagram at The Media Matters. And still working on editing videos for the vlog.
Ooh.
There's a lot of stuff, So...
Don't need to get my makeup out.
It is all coming. Yes. See, if we had a clone, she could come and do our makeup for us. Hair and makeup.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Right. Because apparently we don't have time for anything.
Right.
So in any event, tonight we are talking about none other than the Warrens. Ed and Lorraine Warren. Yep. That's right. And if you know me, you know that some of my favorite scary movies are the Conjuring movies. That series is one of my faves. I love it. I love it.
Y'all, she's practically dancing in her chair.
I am. I love it. It's my favorite. So we are going to talk about the Warrens tonight and let's get down to business. So Ed and Lorraine Warren. So the first time I think I ever saw Lorraine Warren was on Paranormal State, which used to be on A&E with Ryan Buell and Katrina, and he had this whole crew, and they would go and investigate these supposed hauntings and either prove that they were actual hauntings or debunk them and find a logical explanation, which very cool. I love when teams do that and they don't automatically jump to oh, it's a ghost or, you know, whatever.
Right. You have to investigate it.
Right. So very cool show. Used to be one of my favorites. And then Ryan would bring in Chip Coffey, who's a psychic medium. And I love Chip. Chip in his little purse. It's my favorite. Like, he's the bee's knees. I just love it. Did I just kick you?
No, was your dog.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Yuri. And he loves me. He didn't even try to
retaliate. No, he's just so happy to be there.
He is. So in any event, Ryan would bring in Chip Coffey, and on occasion when he needed a demonologist, he would bring in Lorraine Warren. So that's when I first saw her. And then The Conjuring, like buzz about The Conjuring was coming out, and it was like, oh, you know, Lorraine Warren and whatever. I was like, oh, I know her. I was so excited. So we have Ed and Lorraine Warren. They are married. They're not brother and sister. Husband and wife is what they are, or used to be, because Ed has expired. And it's nothing creepy. I was like, when I saw that he wasn't in the physical plane anymore, I was like, oh, was it something crazy and mysterious? No, nothing like that. It was nothing ludicrous. It was completely normal, and that was disappointing.
What?
I was like, he died in the middle of an exorcism, but no, he didn't.
No, he didn't perform exorcisms.
He helped. He helped with some.
Yeah, he.
I was hoping it was something exciting, like, you know.
Yeah.
He killed a dragon or, you know, I don't know, but no, it was.
I think he had his share of exciting times in his life.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm glad he was able to hopefully go peacefully.
Yes. Peace is always, always good.
Yeah.
Always. I mean, you know, he's Ed Warren. He's a big deal. Okay. So here's how the Warren story starts. Back in the day, what day is this? I don't even know. Back mid-century. Is it not crazy to you that mid-century is like the 1950s? That's mid-century.
What?
Yeah.
I guess so.
Right? Oh. Like the 50s, the 60s. That's mid-century.
God. No. See, that just makes me feel old.
You know where I learned this? It had not occurred to me. I was watching HGTV, like some renovation show. And I'm like, what? Mid-century? They said the house was built in the 50s. And then, like, it quickly just pieced together in my brain. And I almost hit the floor. I'm okay, like, what the hell?
So I am mid-century year old.
You're antique.
I'm a half a century.
You're antique, according to HGTV. You're antique.
I am a half a century old.
Yeah.
Oh, that's bullshit.
Yeah. You have galvanized pipes.
Apparently so. I think, yeah, there's medicines for that now.
To hell with you, HGTV.
Oh, God, half a century old.
Right? Mid-century. That's crazy.
That's not right.
I know. So Ed's story begins early century. Beginning century, like way back in 20-something, 1920-something.
Yeah. Born 1926.
There you go. 1926. Okay, so he partially grew up in a haunted house from the age of like 5 to 11 or 12, something like that. And he would see stuff, and his dad, who was a police officer and a heavy skeptic, would be like, Ed. Or Eddie, or I don't know what he called him. It's nowhere. I couldn't find that. But so he would just... He basically would say, like, there's a logical reason for everything. Like, chill. Stop it with all this craziness. So, according to Ed, his father never came up with these logical reasons. So, he's like, oh, there's crap going on. You're going to deny it. And you're not giving me a good reason. So, that's not cool. So, Ed had previously said, my family would all go to bed. And just around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, many times, I would hear the closet door beginning to open up. So I have to sleep with all the doors closed, like my bathroom, closet, that kind of, like, I am not fond of sleeping with the bedroom door open, but I am fond of the air circulation.
Right. Because that messes up the temperature of the air in the house.
Yeah. And so in this house, my bedroom where I sleep, it is at the end of the duct line. So it is warmest in there. Like, the two rooms on this side of the house are the warmest. And that's not cool. So if I close the door, then I know I better just kick the covers off because.
Right.
Mm-mm. So can you sleep with the doors open?
I sleep with the door cracked because I don't want it
open. Like your bedroom door?
Yeah, my bedroom door.
How about like
no, my front door.
What a D. I meant butthole your closet or bathroom door.
My closet stay closed and my bathroom stays open because I want it to, all the humidity from the shower and whatnot to get out of there.
That makes sense.
But my bedroom, I usually, when I sleep, I try to keep it cracked.
Okay, so there's a pause there on my end because Huey is scratching at my leg. He just pawed me hard in the knee. He's like, Mom. I imagine sometimes that he's like Stewie from Family Guy. He's like, Mom, mother. I really do. If Huey had words, like actual words, he'd have an accent. I'm positive. Positive.
Oh my god. Uh-huh. Oh, Huey has an accent. I never knew.
I'm telling you, Huey has an accent. I'm telling you.
Now when I look at him, I'm gonna imagine like Dr. House in my head.
Just like that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So back to the story. So I cannot sleep with my doors open. You evidently can with a cracked front door. Mm-hmm. So whatevs. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Ed says many times the family goes to bed, yada, yada, 2, 3 a.m. He hears the closet beginning to open. Hell no. I would bolt right there. At first, I'd look into that closet and see only shapeless darkness.
Ooh.
Then slowly I'd start to see a light beginning to form and it would morph into like a into a ball shape. Sort of like a basketball. And then I'd begin to see a face in that ball. No. No again. Hard pass.
So was he wide awake or was he dreaming?
No, he was awake. Yeah, he says awake. And then, so he would call that face in the ball, mm-hmm. the ball of light, mm-hmm. the ghost globule.
Okay.
Right? That's a big situation.
And how old was he?
He was, this started when he was like 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when they're young, they can mm-hmm. see more than adults can. So, all right.
Yeah, they're not so quick to shrug things off and explain it away.
Yeah, they're still open.
Right.
Psychically.
Right. So in that globule was a face of an old woman, and she was not looking at all pleasant.
Ooh.
The globule would then come out into my bedroom and then accompanied by audible footsteps and heavy breathing. No, again. No, just no.
Whoa.
No.
It's mm-hmm. messed up.
Mm-hmm. The room would then become icy cold, an unnatural cold, a psychic cold. And I'm saying to myself, Ed, there's a logical reason for everything. But by that time, I was out of the bed and right between my mom and dad in their bed. Poor kid. Poor Aww. Kid. Because I remember all the times that I've been afraid in the night. I mean, as recently as probably a few days ago. Because, you know, things like to bother me in the night. But especially when I was 15 and we had all that crazy activity in our home. And when darkness came and it was like, you know, time for bed was approaching, I was anxious, super anxious, because it was always in my mind, like, what is going to happen tonight? All the time. So I don't even know if I slept when I was like 15, 16. I don't know that I got a good night's sleep. In any event. So we fast forward. At the age of 16, Ed and Lorraine meet. They're both 16.
Aww.
Yeah, it's super sweet. And he works at a movie theater and he's an usher, and she would come in with her mom and the two of them would strike up conversation and yada, yada. And they would, you know, oh, let's share a shake and a slice of pizza. I assume that's what they sound like. So at 17, he joins the Navy. And like a few months later, it's like 4-ish months or something like that. He comes home for 30 days on what's called survivor's leave because his ship sank.
His ship sank. And he was one of the few survivors.
Yes. Like, what the heck?
Yeah.
I feel like it was that ghost, that lady. Oh, the ghost globule.
You think she sank the ship?
I feel like she had a hand in it.
Ooh, she may have.
Right? She like followed him. She's like, you won't leave me behind. I assume that's how it went. Anyway, so he's home for the 30 days. They get married and, you know, live happily ever after. But there's a lot in the middle. So I'm just going to just a little bit. So he gets out of the Navy, goes to school, and he likes to paint. So he's taking these classes and he's like, oh, screw this crap. Like, they're basically teaching me geometry when I'm painting, and I don't want to do that. I want to do my own thing. So he does his own thing and convinces Lorraine that they should move and they could sell the painting. So they do start selling paintings for like anywhere from $2 to $5 each, which to us sounds ridiculous. But at that time, like, a freaking burger was a nickel or something.
Right.
So $2 to $5 is a big deal. Huge deal. Like, if I could get a burger for a nickel right now, maybe that's unhealthy.
Yeah. Well, they don't make burgers today like they used to.
Right? Oh, gosh. A burger sounds good. And then fries. I know. And like a chocolate shake. So anyway, back to the story. So Ed is selling these paintings, and that really was the catalyst for them getting into paranormal investigations. And he would draw, like, they would go to a house they heard was haunted, whatever. And according to them, they're like, listen, we were kids. Nobody's about to let us in to let us take a look around and whatever. So he would draw the house, like, stand outside of the house, sketch it up, and draw like ghosts and crap coming out of the house. And Lorraine would go to the, she was like, tasked with going to the door and being like, oh, hey, we drew this for you. And they're like, what the hell is this? And then they would get invited to come in and investigate whatever, according to them. So kind of weird how they got into these people's homes. But that's how it all started. So they started this investigation thing.
People were so trusting back then.
Right?
And I'm sure she was adorable.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure she was super cute. Not at all looking like she was going to be
like out of a globule. Right.
Out of a globule. So in 52, they founded the New England Society for Psychic Research and opened the doors to their occult museum, which is kind of crazy. They have this actual occult museum on their property.
Yes.
Which is insane. So the occult museum, for you guys that don't know, it is where they keep artifacts from investigations they have done. And these artifacts are said to be possessed, if you will. They have some kind of attachment or something that renders them unsafe to be in civilian hands, if you will.
Right.
So they keep them there. They have the room blessed like once a month, I think it is. And I mean, this room, it's something else. Like, I would like to tour this room. I really would.
Yeah. I think it's closed right now because of zoning regulations, mm-hmm. but they're looking for a new location for this museum.
Nice.
So, but what's cool is that there is an event on October the 26th.
Oh, God.
And for $169, you can go and see the stuff.
Oh, my God.
And they make you sign a release form.
For what?
For any shit that happens to you, they're not responsible.
If you take a spirit home, he's yours to keep.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So in this occult museum is where they have the famous or infamous Annabelle doll, which there is a movie called Annabelle, and then Annabelle Origins or Beginnings or
Creation.
You know, Creation, or that's where she started, like whatever it's called. And so this doll, the real doll doesn't look like the doll in the movies. The real doll is a Raggedy Ann doll.
Which creeps me out because I had a Raggedy Ann doll.
So did I. I had Raggedy Ann and Andy.
And yeah, and she was a sweet doll. She wouldn't hurt anybody, much less kill anybody.
That's what you think. In the night, she was trying to steal your breath. Your eyes got a little big there for a second. You're like, oh, crap. I'd never considered. So, yes, this is she's a Raggedy Ann doll. They have this bee in a glass case, and there's a sign on the front that says, warning, absolutely do not open or something like that. Positively do not open.
With a cross at the top of it.
Right. I mean, this thing is for real. So I did read or watch something like a while back about Ryan Buell from Paranormal Society,
yes.
Paranormal Research Society, doing a tour through there with Lorraine. And Ryan claims that Annabelle moved her head, like almost like she was nodding
yeah.
in.
I see you.
Right. Like, what's up? Yeah, so creepy.
Like, what's up, Buttercup?
Yeah, except I feel like she wasn't being nice about it. Mm-hmm. So that one's creepy because the Warrens say the doll itself is not possessed. There is something attached to it that makes it move. So there's nothing inside the doll. There's something outside of the doll, which is creepy. Ooh. Yeah. And they show this. So they talk about it in The Conjuring. And then in The Conjuring 2, they actually show what they mean. And it really was the one of the creepiest scenes, because I know we're not talking about the Annabelle movie, but or The Conjuring. No, it was Annabelle. It was Annabelle. So in the first Annabelle movie is where they show this. And so the doll is like on the floor. And then you see the doll start to stand up, and it's kind of in the shadows of the room, and it starts to stand up, and then it starts to levitate, and you're going, what the hell's going on? But then as the camera pans back, like pans out, you can see that there's something standing behind the doll, and it's the demon. So the demon is holding this doll and making it move. And so you don't see that all the time.
So the doll is just a tool.
Right. Exactly. So super creepy. So that's the doll that is in that glass case.
Uber creepy. I know. Scary, uber scary, creepy.
So then let's fast forward. 1965. The Warrens go on with their investigations, whatever. And then they do a case where they come across the spirit of a little girl named Cynthia. And in this investigation, Cynthia, speaking through a medium, is asking for help, and she is trying to find her mother. So it's at this point that things take a turn in their paranormal investigation career, where they say, you know what, we actually want to do more than just identify that there is a spirit or something in the house or at a location or in a person. We want to help these earthbound spirits move on, cross over. So things change a little bit here. I mean, they continue with their work in paranormal investigations, of course, and helping out with exorcisms and whatnot, but they do change it up a little bit by doing that, where Ed is the demonologist, Lorraine is a trans medium.
Right.
So she can see these things, and she, at an early age, could see halos around people, like the auras, and so that kind of thing. So really cool. Really cool stuff. I mean, in their career, they claim to have investigated over 10,000 different cases.
Which is crazy.
Right?
That's crazy.
Like, how many cases are you investigating per week? That's right. A lot of work.
Now, talk about having to move houses. Can you imagine the boxes of case files? Because there were no computers.
Right. Right. There's no scanning anything into anything. It's all pen and paper.
Right.
And tapes.
That's a lot of moving boxes.
Yeah. Tapes upon tapes upon tapes. Good heavens.
So I wonder what percentage of it they explained. They could actually legit. Okay, this is, you know, a logical explanation. Mm-hmm. And what percentage was, okay, this is paranormal. We have no explanation for this.
I wonder too. And Ed has said, I mean, they have been faced with so much skepticism over the year, which skepticism is healthy. Like, it just is. But he has said from the beginning, he is not like jump in believer. He is a skeptic first. And he definitely goes into these cases looking for the logical.
Right.
Which I always appreciate. Like I said, you know, even I don't jump into stuff and I'm like, oh, it's a demon. Like, it's just, that's not always the case. It's, I think, rarely the case. It really is.
Yeah.
Earthbounds and all that. Yeah, it happens and stuff. But let's talk about some of the cases that the Warrens have been a part of. So some of these are, well, there's a few that we can talk about. And these are some of the more famous ones. And I didn't even know that they were linked to all of these, which is kind of cool. So we just talked about Annabelle. So this is the doll, like I said, that is in the occult museum in the glass case with the sign that says warning, positively do not touch. So she was previously owned by a nurse, Louise, in 1970, and then some creepy things started happening. So if I remember the story correctly, because I think we've covered this before,
mm-hmm.
or something along these lines. So if I remember correctly, it's this nurse and her roommate, and I think like one of their moms like gifts them the doll, and then they start to notice that the doll is like moving in the apartment. they put her in one spot and she's in another, and then they're finding
like Elf the Shelf.
Yes, except without the cute outfit. Then they start finding like notes on parchment paper that's like, oh, you know, help me, help us, and whatever else. And so they don't even have like parchment paper in the apartment. And one of their boyfriends like stays there and his stuff is destroyed. Like, I mean, you know, it's that kind of thing. So they call someone in, they call in like a psychic medium or something. And she's like, oh, so what's going on here is that there's a spirit of a little girl that used to live here. Her name is Annabelle and she died. And she just is basically like lonely and wants a friend. Like she wants to know if she can possess this doll or whatever the hell. And so it tugs at their heartstrings and they're like, oh my God, of course. And things get worse because they have now given permission for this thing to like go balls to the wall.
Like, I'm sure that thing was telling the truth.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. So then, you know, things get really bad. So the Warrens come in to help and the Warrens are like, whoa, not at all true. It is not a possession. This is someone, this is a demon that is attached to this doll and making it move and making it do all these things, and or making it look like the doll is doing these things.
Right.
So yeah, they take it, stick it in the glass case, and that is that.
And there it sits,
mm-hmm.
looking all cute, mm-hmm. with his button eyes and red hair.
Right.
And
because geez. And then like people go into the museum and take pictures like right next to it, which I don't know if I'm that brave. Like even through glass, I feel like you can do some stuff.
Yeah. Like, come on. Yeah. And things come out in photographs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then they have another object in there. Or I said we're going to talk about the stories, the cases they've done. But mm-hmm. I actually wanted to talk first about some of the artifacts in the museum.
Okay.
So sorry, guys. Sorry. So there is Annabelle, like I said. There is a conjuring mirror. So it's referred to what?
That's yeah. The conjuring mirror is like, whoa.
Okay. You talk about it. You talk about it.
No. You go ahead.
Okay. So it's referred to as a dangerous object. The conjuring mirror is used in rituals to summon spirits. Because of the inability to control whether the spirits summoned are good or evil, communication through devices like this are not recommended. And we've talked mirrors before.
Yes.
Mirrors are creepy. They just are. They just are. And I still refuse to put a mirror in my bedroom. Like, I just do. I can't do it because it freaks me out.
Yeah. I mean, I look at rituals and whatnot. And if they call for a mirror, I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, no, mm-hmm. nope. Not for me.
Right. Because reflections and.
Nope. Nothing good comes of that.
Yeah. Which, oh, I don't know. So yeah, if they have a mirror in there that's been used to summon spirits and you cannot control, you know, you don't have a bouncer that's like, whoa, pay your fee. That's not how it works. So
a mirror bouncer.
Exactly. Then they have what they call a shadow doll. And this doll is said to be able to visit you in your dreams like freaking Freddy Krueger and has the ability to stop your heart. Like, how do they know this?
I don't get that.
I guess like the only way to know that is to have seen it as part of the case. But then how do you link the two? And you're like, oh, it was the doll.
Yeah.
Because if your heart stopped, I assume you died. And how are you, unless you're like coming through from the other side to Lorraine and you're like, it was the damn doll.
Yeah. I'd like to know the story behind mm-hmm. that, because how can any entity just reach in and stop your heart? I mean, that's crossing from the spiritual to the physical. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's two different realms. I don't know
if they can touch you, then why would they stop at like your surface? Why can't they go into your body?
I don't know. It would be pretty powerful, unless they're just like unless it's just like a temporary stopping your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know today, like people with sleep apnea, you know, they measure the heart rate and they go, oh yeah, you know, mm-hmm. you're stopping breathing for so many minutes and whatnot. So I know today they can measure that, but back then could they measure? I mean, really what vital signs can you measure?
That's a good point. And maybe these people weren't experiencing like a stoppage of the heart because of the doll. They had sleep apnea. And the doll just happened to be present.
Sure.
I mean, well, case solved.
Every time I see you, my heart stops, baby Obvi. Girl.
Obviously, look at me. Okay. So they also have a vampire's coffin. What? What? Because they said they found this object and it was used by a modern day vampire.
I want to know that story too.
Me too.
It's like where, who, what, when, why.
Yeah. And Picker, it didn't happen. Like, I need to see photos. Tell me. I mean, I need some concrete stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, they have an organ. It's not that creepy until you know that it plays itself. An organ in general gives me the shivers because I associate it with, like, they sound creepy as hell.
Right.
There's nothing relaxing to me about a freaking organ at all. And we're not talking body organs, y'all. We're talking
church organ.
Musical instrument. Sure. Like, there's nothing that relaxes me about an organ.
Any instrument playing by itself. No.
It's just in bad taste. Just stop. So in addition to all this, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we can't even begin to put on the list because they don't even publicize it. But they have skulls, they have tombstones, like a lot of stuff that's been used in rituals, satanic rituals.
So I'm curious, I mean, because the museum is currently closed mm-hmm. for rezoning purposes. What the heck? What kind of what zone do you have to be in to have something like this? I mean, it's a museum.
Mm-hmm.
So what did the powers that be shut them down on? You know, I'm curious, you know, was it home mm-hmm. versus residential? Right. Versus,
that's what I'm guessing. Like, if you're running a business like that, you can't do it out of your home in a lot of places. So you can't just have people traipsing through your home and you're charging them money and,
maybe that was it.
It's just not safe. So that's what I would guess.
Or you have to have a certain zone to have mirrors that are gateways other realms.
Yeah. I mean, having that in a neighborhood is just,
that's crazy.
It's irresponsible. You can only have 999 artifacts and you guys have 1,004. So I don't know. I really don't know. I'm guessing you're running a business in a neighborhood and that's a big no-no. Everybody's got to make money. Everybody. Warrens. Okay. So let's get down to the nitty gritty. Some of the famous cases that the Warrens have been a part of. Lego. So first up.
My ego.
The Perrin family. So we've talked about this before. I know we have. Right?
Yes. Season one. Right? Season one.
We've done it, I'm sure. Did we? Okay. So the Perrin family. This is the family that the Conjuring movie is based off of. So this is a couple named Roger and Carolyn Perrin, and they have, I think it's 5 daughters, and they moved to this home in, I think it's Rhode Island. I think it's Rhode Island, which has no relevance in any event. They moved to this home and crazy stuff starts happening from the jump. So there are some discrepancies between real life and the movie, but in any event, so I'll tell you this. The home that they lived in was originally built in 1736 and was once inhabited or said to have been inhabited by Bathsheba Thayer and her 4 children, 3 of whom died young. So despite the high infant mortality rates of that time, those deaths and the circumstances around them were pretty suspicious in the town. And she caught a lot of heat. And in the movie, they say like, oh, she was a Satan worshiper and she killed the kids or at least the first one or whatever, as a result of like, as a sacrifice is basically what it was. So if that's true, I don't really know. But so they did label her as a Satanist. The community did. And allegedly, she hung herself in the backyard. And she also, you know, there was a curse in the movie where she's like, I curse anyone that lives on this land. They will die or whatever. And so like anybody that lived there, like, you know, not every family member would die, but it's like the kid or the mom, you know, somebody drowned in the pond or whatever. So while the Perrin family lived in that home, there were numerous pleasant ghostly interactions, like spirits playing with kids or helping to do chores, which that's kind of handy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know if I'm down to just the plates floating around. They're going from the dishwasher to the cabinet. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if it's like bed knobs and broomsticks where like just everything goes mm-hmm. back to their proper place mm-hmm, mm-hmm. or, you know, Mary Poppins.
I can get on board.
Yeah. Yeah. Dishes washing themselves. And
sure. I come home, the vacuum's running and the carpet's sure. clean and the dogs are bathed.
Sure. Like Mickey Mouse and the,
sure.
and the mop and yeah. everything's getting all cleaned up all on its own.
No, I can get on board. I can get on board. So apparently not all of their guests were friendly. They didn't have just Casper floating around. There were some darker interactions like Bathsheba, who took a more menacing presence in the home. So it was things like disembodied voices, furniture moving on its own, full spectral appearances, that the kids saw or the mom or whatever. So Carolyn, the mom, was allegedly one of Bathsheba's most consistent targets and apparently very jealous of Carolyn's role as both mother and wife. And the ghost reportedly pinched and slapped Carolyn quite a bit and even touched Roger, her husband, inappropriately on several occasions, which listen.
Oh, it's on.
It is on.
It's on. You touched my man.
Like, never yeah. mind that you are pinching and slapping me. Like, we're going to get down. But then, like, you're touching my guy.
Oh, yeah. It's on.
Listen.
It's on. It's on.
Kitty has claws.
Oh, yeah.
So the Warrens were brought in to help. And I think it was like the early to mid 70s. I was going to say the 90s. Early to mid 70s. And it seems like their presence there only agitated the situation. And they were eventually just asked to leave because things just got really bad. So, I mean, I think the family ended up moving. They were like, F this, we're out.
Oh, so would I.
Peace. Yeah.
I don't think I would wait for the Warrens to come. I'd be out.
Yeah, right? Out. Yeah, no. We're going to go sleep in the car under a bridge. Like, we're going to struggle as a family. I don't care, but we're out of this because yep. you can have the house.
Yep, safety first. Mm-hmm. I'm out.
I'm burning that down to the ground. So that, I'm pretty sure we've talked about the Perrin family before. And I know like one of the kids, one of the daughters has written a book, like, you know, she put her whole story out there and I would love to read that book or even talk to her. Like, if you're listening, we want to have you on the show because, man.
Call us.
Mm-hmm. Like Blondie. Just call me. Anyway. Okay. Moving on. What do you have next, Marie?
Well, I've got the haunting in Connecticut with the... And tell me if I'm saying this right. The Snedecker family.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
The Snedecker family. So in 1986, the family of Alan and Carmen Snedecker moved into an old residence known as the Hallahan House in Southington, Connecticut. They had three sons, ages 13, 11, and 3. A 6-year-old daughter and two nieces that would join them later. They claim that they did not know that the house used to be a funeral home. Now, the neighbors say, oh, yes, you knew. But the family is saying, oh, no, we didn't know. We didn't know. But they found in the basement a box of coffin handles, a chain and pulley that was used to lift the caskets with, and this grosses me out the most, a blood drainage pit.
Mm-hmm.
That's, but it's all the tools of a funeral home. So the oldest son, Philip, his bedroom was down in the basement, and he reported seeing ghosts. And but the parents kind of shrugged it off and said, oh, it was because of the treatments he was receiving for his Hodgkin's disease. But then his personality started changing. He started wearing leather, started having an interest in demonology. He broke into a neighbor's house. He told his mom he wanted a gun so that he could kill his stepdad. I mean, it got bad. And this went on for about 2 years. And even one of the nieces said that she felt a hand that had fondled her. And there was apparitions and noises and physical attacks. And so they brought in Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so, and from there, I mean, things get kind of crazy, because the Warrens brought in two psychic researchers who were actually their grandson and their nephew.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved in the house for 9 weeks, and they even went on the Sally Jesse Raphael show. And I mean,
the family
or
the investigators,
the family did.
Hmm.
The family did. And but see, by then, you know, now money's starting to get involved. We're talking book deals and mm-hmm. and whatnot. So and then they started explaining away some things. They started you know, they found out that the fondling, it was actually the son sneaking into the room. So he was hauled off to the police and things like that. But and neighbors, all the neighbors were basically calling BS onto the story.
Mm-hmm.
And saying that, oh yeah, those chains you heard. Yeah, I heard them too, because I saw the truck going down the street with the chain behind it. So yes, it was a famous story. And yes, there was a lot of critics of the story. Mm-hmm. And in, you know, now we're finding, you know, drug use and this and that and everything else. But I mean, I still believe that, you know, with 10,000 cases, I think some of them were legit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of them, it only takes one fake story to ruin it for the rest.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure. Now, I remember watching this story on, I think it was on the Discovery Channel, and they used to have a series called A Haunting or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just come back from New Orleans like that very day, and flipping through, and I stopped on this show, and it was the creepiest crap, like one of the creepiest things I've ever watched. And it was like, if I remember from the documentary, it was the oldest son and the next oldest brother slept downstairs together. And it was, here's one of the things I'll say up front, is they did move to this town and this house because the oldest son was going through treatment and they needed to be closer to the hospital. Like, they were burning through money with these treatments and the trips back and forth. So this was their solution. And so the family already is going through it. They're in a tough financial position. They now don't have the money to move, you know, regardless of what's going on. They have to stick it out. And they have the stress of their son being ill. And so there's a lot at play here.
Right.
And to me, it's almost the perfect recipe for something like this to happen. It leaves the door wide open for things to come in and start messing around. So I do remember watching this, and it's seriously, like, it creeped me out so much. I mean, so the brother eventually, like, moved out of the basement because he was so creeped out, and he started waking up to see, like, his older brother, like, talking to somebody, but there's no one there. Or I think he may have seen the figure. Like, I can't remember very well, like, all the details, but I do remember, like, the personality of the oldest son started changing, and one of the cousins, like, came to stay, and she's like, dude, what is up with you? And he's trying to convince her that this stuff is going on. I mean, he was scared, and he would do whatever this, you know, demon or entity or whatever was telling him to do. And But the family went through it, and there was stuff like, you know, somebody in the shower, and then this entity would come in and, you know, like wrap the curtain around them, or it was crazy stuff. Yeah. Really crazy stuff. So we obviously weren't there. We can't say definitively that this did or didn't happen. But based on the account of the family, I mean, just watching that documentary, and I know a lot of things, you know, it doesn't take a lot for you to get together and be like, this is our story.
Right.
It just doesn't. But I don't know. I mean, if they really took the time to do this and come out, you know, to fool everybody, then so be it, because you fooled me. But,
well, I think people love being scared.
Mm-hmm.
And people pay a lot of money to be scared, because right. It's fun. And I think I don't think they moved into the house with that intention. I think maybe they moved into the house and I think they felt things were legitimately happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, oh, wait, we can get a book deal out of this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now let me exaggerate a little bit and let me make it sound a little more dramatic than what it is.
And it could have been them or whoever was writing for them, because right. It doesn't mean that they did the writing. They just, you know, maybe told a story. So you're right. Things do get exaggerated along the way. It was a very crazy documentary. It was, I mean, if that really went down, that was some legit scary stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the mom talking about she would put like a bucket together with mop water so she could clean the floors, and she would start mopping and the water is like red. And she's, you know, freaking out, going, what the hell is up? And then it's not actually red. There's not blood on the floor. It's just water. Yeah. But it's, I mean, for the eldest son to go through personality changes like that, I don't know what medical treatments he was undergoing and if the medications could have caused that, or if it was legitimately a possession of some sort, you know, like...
Well, you put a teenage boy, and teenagers, and we've talked about this before, mm-hmm. are more susceptible to hauntings and whatnot.
Right.
I mean, their energies are through the roofs mm-hmm. anyway because of the hormonal changes. So you take that, you put him in the basement of a former funeral home mm-hmm. that still has all its crap in it.
Right.
You know, it's like a recipe for a mm-hmm. horror story.
Oh yeah.
And whatnot. But Ray Garten, who was the writer for the book for the Southington House, he's even come out and said that he's glad that the book went out of print because, and it quote, the family involved, which was going through some serious problems like alcoholism and drug addiction, could not keep their story straight. And I became very frustrated.
Yeah, I read that too.
It's hard writing a nonfiction book when all the people involved are telling you different stories.
Mm-hmm. And how different were the stories? I mean, does he mean it was, you know, there were two people? You know what I mean? Yeah, because
but regardless... It's still a good, scary story.
No, it definitely is.
It's still a good, scary story.
And I think that there are aspects of this that are very true. And like I said, we weren't there. We will never know.
Right.
We'll never know. But I hope that the family is doing very well, just like the parents and all of these families, because it's hard to go through stuff like that. And it really takes a toll on you, on all the members of your family. Everyone's going through it. And if some of the things are true, like... I read somewhere that apparently the morticians, like back in the day, the morticians used to do some unsavory things with the bodies. And so, you know, if that's true, are those spirits were angry, they were earthbound, they were, you know, whatever it is, because it's, I don't know. I don't know if at that point you're hanging out with your body and you're like, what are you doing to me?
Right.
I don't know if you even care. Like, I really don't know. I haven't been on the other side, so I don't know. It's an interesting story for sure.
Oh, yeah. Definitely a scary story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you want to be scared out of your wits end.
Hells yeah. Okay. So So we're going to move on to the Amityville case. And this is the case, I believe, that really put the Warrens on the map.
Yes,
so it is. I've seen like one or two of these movies. I saw the remake with delicious Ryan Reynolds. Oh, baby Jesus, that
now,
guy.
Now, there were like 17 different movies on this particular story.
Yeah, a lot of movies. So
again, a good scary story.
Very
whether
good scary
it, whether story. Whether it's true or not, mm-hmm. it's still a good scary right. story.
So this is the quick wrap up. So it is arguably the most famous of the Warrens investigations. And I didn't even know until, you know, we started doing the podcast and stuff that they were tied to this. I had no idea. So it has been made into books and movies and all that stuff. And like Marie said, there's like 17 or some odd books or something like that. So in any event, this is about the Lutz family, and they take up residence in a suburban Dutch colonial house in Amityville, Long Island in 1975. And a year before they moved in, the residence had been the site of a deadly mass murder when Ronald DeFeo Jr. brutally killed 6 members of his family. So fast forward, the Lutz family moves in, and for 28 days they lived in the home. And it was the parents, the Lutz parents, and their 3 children. And while there, the family reported that they heard voices, they saw swarms of flies, welts, family members levitating, banging noises, unseen entities. They felt things touch them. Like, it was pandemonium in this house. Like, it was madness. So the Warrens were eventually called to cleanse the house and brought a local TV crew with them. And after taking photos, including one featuring a boy with glowing eyes, the Warrens determined that the land had curses on it, which, you know, is it true? I don't know. But so, you know, going back, Ronald DeFeo did say that he was told to do this. This is something that, you know, a demon or an evil spirit, whatever, told him to do, was to murder his family. So that's what he was hanging his hat on. And the Lutz family, you know, then comes in a year later and all this crap is going on. And at day 28, they're like, that's it. Uncle, we're out. Like, we can't hang.
I don't think I would have lasted 28 days.
Me either. No, I'm sorry. Ain't gonna happen. So bravery for the Lutz family for hanging in for 28 days. Good job for you guys. There are also, like every other story, there are skeptics that are like, the Lutz family, they're a bunch of liars. None of that stuff went down. It's all for publicity, and the Warrens wanted to make money and become known and whatever, whatever. So is it true? Is it not true? We don't know. We weren't there. We have no way of knowing. So we can go off of what the Lutz family says. They looked genuinely frightened. Their stories matched up. I mean, I don't know what to say. It's creepy as hell.
Well, I mean, I think they actually came out and admitted it, that they created this horror story over a bottle of wine, over many bottles of wine. Mm-hmm. I mean, they, and then the lawyer for the guy that killed his family, he was going to use it to try to get his client off. Mm. So, I mean, they all came out and said, oh yeah, it wasn't real. Mm-hmm. But again, what a good horror story. What a story to scare the weeby jeebies out of you.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That is creepy. So, they're not the, I don't think they're the only ones, though, that have been in that home and said stuff has gone on. So is there some truth to this? I think there could be. It could also all be fabricated by anyone that's been in there. But, you know, who knows? Who knows? All right. So we're going to move on to another Warren case. And this is the South End Werewolf. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued. A freaking werewolf. So perhaps one of their most unusual cases from the files, the Warren files, the X-Files.
You know, that would be a great TV series.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
The Warren files?
Yes, the Warren files. Mm-hmm. That would be, yeah. Like, shoot, they got 10,000 episodes to do.
Come on, FX.
Yeah.
The Warren files.
That would be a great.
Heck yeah. I think it'd be really cool. I'd watch it.
Oh, yeah. That'd be a great series.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this particular case took place, this investigation took place out of the U.S. to a seaside town in Essex, England. There, a man by the name of Bill Ramsey was believed to be possessed by a demon that manifested as a wolf. Growing up, Ramsey was a normal, happy boy. One day, though, at the young age of 9, he suddenly began exhibiting inhuman qualities. Creepy.
Ooh.
Creepy, yes. Because when little kids do weird things like that, it just freaks me out. Like, stop barking or walking backwards or like, just stop. Okay.
Yeah, you're not cute, Michael J. Fox. No, stop.
Stop it. Just stop. Okay, so reportedly, while playing outside in his backyard, Ramsey felt a frigid cold overtake him and his nostrils were overcome with an awful stench before he flew into a rage, uprooting a fence post. What the hell? Did they not put fence posts in with concrete back in the day?
Well,
mid-century?
his superpowers came in and...
Yeah, like he did this and the fence was still attached. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is crazy. Okay, so anyway... He uproots this fence post and is gnawing on its wire meshing. What? With this kid? Oh my God. Okay. Okay. Ramsey eventually grew up, became a loving husband and father of three, and was incident free until the 1960s.
Oh, did a full moon come out?
So full moon. The early years of his marriage were plagued by nightmares, cold sweats, and waking up to the pants of a wild animal, which he soon realized were coming from him. I know. How creepy. You're like, what the? That's me. In the 1980s, Bill would repeatedly feel overcome by the sensations he had as a child while hanging out with friends, and even once while doing a citizen's arrest. What?
What?
Like he was arresting someone and he like had the urge to howl? I'd like to know. So at one point, he attacked a friend in a car on their way home from a pub and manhandled police in intense altercations on several occasions. Like, what with this guy? Was he, like, drinking too much? Okay. So in the midst of this, Ramsey spent several stints in the hospital, all featuring the same symptoms of rage, inhuman strength, bared teeth, growling, hunched shoulders, and hands curled like claws. In an interview with the Warrens about their experience with Ramsey, Ed Warren stated that Ramsey would ask to be locked up in a jail cell for his protection and the protection of the public. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right? I mean, smart. Responsible.
Smart. Yeah. Don't want to hurt anybody.
For sure.
Werewolf of the conscience. I get it.
It's the kind of werewolf I like. So when the Warrens got wind of Ramsey's situation, they asked him to their Connecticut home where Bishop Robert McKenna would perform a recorded exorcism on Ramsey. How it ends? I'm guessing Ramsey's okay. Like, I couldn't find a lot of stuff on this guy, the werewolf.
Well, let's just hope he was able to live a normal life and become a grandpa and live happily ever after.
Sit on the porch. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very crazy. Very crazy. Okay. So what are the cases you have?
Oh, that was it.
That was it for you. Okay. So the last one I have is the trial of, I might butcher her name. Is it Arne Cheyenne Johnson? Arne? Okay. Doesn't matter. Anyway. So in this landmark trial, paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren were called to testify on behalf of Arne Cheyenne Johnson, the first known case in the U.S. to use the devil made me do it defense. That is interesting as heck. It really is. So on the evening of February 16th, 1981, 19-year-old Johnson engaged to Debbie Glatzel and out for dinner with her, their landlord, Alan Bono, and others, stabbed Bono multiple times using a pocket knife.
Oh, what did he do to him?
Let's find out. Johnson would plead not guilty by possession, a defense founded on Johnson's relationship with his soon-to-be wife's younger brother, David. As in Berkowitz? In the summer of 1980, David woke to what he described as a man with big black eyes, a thin face with animal features and jagged teeth, pointed ears, horns, and hooves. Holy crap, that's creepy. I mean...
That's beyond werewolf.
Right. The demon's description mirrors the creature from horror hit insidious and apparently scared David so much that Debbie turned to Arne for help. Johnson couldn't find a reasonable explanation for David's bruises or scratches, so the family pivoted to a priest. That supposedly only angered the entity more, causing it to make David hiss, speak in multiple voices, and quote, "Paradise Lost." The Warrens were brought in. In an interview, with People magazine, Lorraine stated that while Ed interviewed the boy, I saw a black misty form next to him, which told me we were dealing with something of a negative nature. Soon the child was complaining that invisible hands were choking him and there were red marks on him. He said that he had the feeling of being hit. What the heck?
Wow.
Mm-hmm. As the lights flicker in
here. I know. I wasn't sure if that was my imagination.
No, that's like the second or third time. I don't like it. So the Warrens supposedly worked with the Diocese of Bridgeport and four priests who were brought in to exorcise more than 40 demons from David.
Oh my gosh.
40 freaking demons. Not a one, not a two. Jesus.
40.
40. Like 40. Mm-hmm. The diocese has only admitted to investigating the Glatzel case, but allegedly the event saw David return to normal. Arne, however, became their alleged new target. After moving in with Debbie and going to dinner at a bar with Bono, a fight between the two older men broke out and Johnson stabbed Bono. Johnson's defense didn't hold up in court and he was found guilty of first-degree manslaughter, serving only 5 years of his initially longer sentence. What the heck? I'm still caught up on the 40 demons.
Yeah. I can't. No, wow.
Jeez. Okay, so I do have one more. Just one more.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I remember we talked about this one. So the Enfield poltergeist. So I remember clearly this is what The Conjuring 2 is based on. This story right here. So this is the story of, I think it's the mom. She's like a single mom, Peggy, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And she has five kids. Is it five kids? She has a few kids. Anyway.
More than one.
Yeah. More than one. Multiples. She has multiple.
Not 40.
Children's. Yeah. Not 40. So they live in Enfield, England. And it's Peggy Hodgson, I think is her name. So she calls the cops and is claiming like my kids are seeing furniture move and whatever. And so really like the activity surrounded Janet, I think is her name. She's like 11 years old. And that's like when all this stuff started. So the activity surrounded her and she would levitate. Things were like being moved around the house. There were knocking sounds, like it was madness. It was madness. And I think this went on for like a couple of years and the Warrens came in. And they only came in for a quick minute. Like, they were not there long term, like it's depicted in the movie. It was very short lived, but they did investigate this case. And in the end, like, I mean, there's a lot of controversy around this case because there are many people that say the whole thing was a hoax. And the Hodgson family says, no way in hell this stuff really happened. There, I mean, they have reports from like the first night that the cops were called that a cop saw a chair move all on its own. Like, it was just, there was no explanation for that. So it's things like that, like the neighbors had seen stuff happen. So they had witnesses that saw these things and saw Janet levitate and heard Janet speak in different, like a man's voice, this 11-year-old girl, which, not saying it's impossible.
Oh, scary
for her to do it. Yeah, but so really interesting case. And in the end, like the activity just suddenly stopped. Like this went on for like 2 years, 18 months, something like that. And then like snap of a finger, it just stopped. So crazy. Craziness. So crazy. I just want to know like what the Warrens would do post investigation. Like they are... I don't know how to word that because one is gone and one is not, but
yeah, Lorraine's still alive, right? Yeah. So Lorraine, if you're listening,
mm-hmm. hit us up, Lorraine.
Call us.
We want to talk to you. Anyway, both devout Catholics. So I'm sure there was a lot of prayer and a lot of that kind of stuff that went on. And obviously they really believe in the power of prayer and the power of their religion because they have this occult museum and have it blessed at least like once a month. And
right.
So they know the power of these tools. So I'd like to know what their process was like before, during, and after. Hey, Hennessy girl. Hi, mama. Sorry, guys, she just came in the room.
One of the puppies just came
in. Another guest. Oh, she's going to lay at the door. So I would really like to know what their process was, because while not every case was something of, you know, that was demonic in nature or a haunting or whatever, the ones that were, I mean, that stuff can really attach itself to you. It can really weigh you down, you messing with all that stuff. I mean, it really just can be exhausting. And so anyway, I just think it would be interesting to know, because I haven't come across any of that.
What their methods were.
Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean. I get you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I get you.
Yep. So you guys, that is our episode on the Warrens. And it was fun researching this. And I would love, once they get their zoning issues worked out, I would love to go to the museum. Yeah.
What I think is neat is, you know, like the Marvel movies, you know, how they're making them all connect. Mm-hmm. You know, they're creating the Marvel universe. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing now is they're basically creating, with all these movies, the Warren universe. They're putting snippets in the movies to connect them all. You know, they're connecting, you know, The Conjuring to Annabelle to, you know, they're creating this Warren universe, basically. Right. The Nun.
Well, that one's actually just, it's fictitious.
Right, but they're connecting them all mm-hmm. together.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of neat.
I do too.
They're creating the scary universe.
Yeah,
and connecting them all together.
I think it's very cool. And it does make me feel a little bit better to know that The Nun is not based on actual events. Because that bitch is scary looking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I am going to go see it this weekend.
I knew you would.
I know.
I knew you would.
Just last night, I was talking to one of my cousins, and I was like, my bee's going to be at a... out of pocket, so why don't we I'm trying to get her and my mom to go, and she goes, damn it, I did promise you that I would go with you. I said, yes, you did. So
why would she do that?
Because mm-hmm. She's a sucker. She's a sucker for me. And we've seen, so when the second Insidious movie came out, we went and watched it, but we didn't just go watch that one. AMC had a Red Door special. Mm-hmm. Where you could watch the first one and then watch the second one immediately after. And it was, it premiered early if you did the Red Door special.
Okay.
So we went and did that. And it was so much fun for me because it was that cousin and my mom. And my mom was like in her chair, like feet curled up in the chair, scared. And she's like, oh my God. I'm like, Mom, shh. So it was great fun. I laugh the whole time. And they're like, how are you so calm? I'm like, because you two are hilarious.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was so much fun. So there was we watched the first one. There was a little bit of a break. And then we watched the second one, which was so fun to watch it early. It just lights me up. I love it. Love it.
Again, she's dancing in her chair.
I know. I love a good scary movie. And now Halloween is coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. I am so excited. So excited. So the one thing that I'm not sure how I feel about is that this movie is supposed to be technically part two.
Technically.
So there's the first one with Laurie Strode, and she, you know, encounters Michael and he tries to slaughter her, whatevs. The second one in the original lineup picks up immediately where the first one left off, and she goes to the hospital and Michael Myers goes to the hospital and he's trying to find her and all that good stuff. And she is running from him, like all that. Now, in the new Halloween universe, they like scrapped all those movies. And it goes from the very first one to now this new one. Huh. I know. Yeah. So this one picks up like 30, 40 years later.
Okay.
And Lori hasn't gone through all that other crap that she's gone through in like Halloween H2O and all that stuff. And she has just been prepping all these years for the return of Michael Myers because she just knew this son of a bee was going to come back. So that's where I'm a little like, I need to see this and really get a feel for it because I don't know how I feel about it right now.
Right.
Like sitting here now and watching the trailers, I'm like, I'm going to see it because it's Halloween, but I have some mixed emotions about it. So, but
yeah, hopefully they do it right.
I feel like, I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's going to be good. I'm like, you're scrapping all these movies? Why?
Yeah, well, 2.0.
Mm-hmm, Mm-hmm. And there are like, there's already a couple of Halloween universes or universi. Like, I don't so there's like the originals with, you know, the 70s versions and those. And then there are the, what's his name? Rob. What is his name? God, I'm like drawing a blank right now. So there are the remakes.
Okay.
And there's the remake of the original Halloween, and there's the remake of the second one, and they are vastly more violent and, I mean, a different universe because they are redone.
Right. And as technology changes and the more gruesome you can get, the more graphic you can get. And right. It's like, ooh, let's do it all over again.
Right. But unlike the very first one where it's, you know, you don't know much about who Michael Myers is, like you get little snippets. In the remake, they go way back into his childhood where he's like killing animals and crap. You know what I mean? Like they go way back. So not even, it's like a complete reboot is what it is. So they already have two different Halloween worlds, and now they're, I'm like, is this a third world? Like what is happening? I don't understand. Yeah. I don't know. But this is my season for scary movies. Yeah. I am pumped.
The thing is, if it makes money, they're going to keep going with it.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to add a chapter to the beginning. They're going to add a chapter to the end. They're going to insert a chapter in the middle.
Right. And then the beginning.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. and they're going to keep luring you in.
No, that's true. That's true. And I'm the sucker that's going to pay to go see it.
Being scared is big business.
It is.
It is big business.
Yes. And I contribute to that wholeheartedly. I just do. Yep. In any event, you guys, that is our episode on Ed and Lorraine Warren. I just renamed them for a second there. And I'm pretty sure I already said that, but then I got caught up in horror movies. So sorry about that. Yeah, this episode was a lot of fun. I enjoyed researching the Warrens and revisiting some of those stories, the cases in their paranormal files, and even finding out about some of these cases that I didn't know were linked to them. So that was really cool. Don't forget, if you guys have any Ed and Lorraine questions or stories that you've come across, whatever the case, make sure you reach out to us and let us know, because we definitely want to hear from you. And this could be written or audible. And just send it to us at themediamatters@gmail.com. And make sure you don't forget to find us on Twitter and Snapchat at Media Matters, and on Facebook and Instagram at The Media Matters. And as always, you know, we appreciate your good reviews on iTunes and wherever. So make sure you guys find us and leave us a good review or a review period. We want to know how you truly feel about the show. And if there's something that you want us to change, let us know and we will talk about it and consider it. See what's up. So with that, you guys, thanks for hanging with us again. It's always a blast to be with you. Thank you for checking out the show. And I mean, it's just, the show is doing so well right now. I don't even know what to say. I am so floored, and I really feel like I'm being punked.
like, exceeding your expectations.
Yeah, it's like, it just feels amazing. So thank you guys so much.
Because
like,
you're so awesome.
I really am. It's true. I really am.
Just kidding. Chantel, awesome sauce.
I know. Awesome since.
Awesome sauce.
Last century. Brightening the world. So thank you guys again. We love you, and we will hang out with you next Tuesday. Good night, everybody.
Good night.